Yes, that funky music means it's time for DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsors this week, New Relic and Squarespace, my old friend Squarespace. They are making that possible by sponsoring our show, able to give that to you for free. DLC, of course, is the show all about gaming in its many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, slash friend, slash nemesis, or as I like to say, my co-fremesis, the man whose supporting actor performance in the video for Stanky Dick was woefully overlooked at the Oscars this year, Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello. Yeah, I just had a small dance routine in that. And I'm going to say this at the top of the show. Give us a review on iTunes. Even if you don't listen to this show via iTunes, if you have an iTunes account, go over there and give us a review. It might seem silly, but it really helps. And you enjoy the show. We enjoy doing it. So let's do something together. And also, I want to introduce, because movie musicals are so important to me, please help me welcome to the stage the wonderful, the beautiful, the amazingly wicked, Robidoo Scooby-Bop. John Travolta. Did you watch the Oscars last night?
Oh, yes, I did. I did.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved his wig, by the way. It was the best performance by a wig on stage.
That's so good.
But we're not talking about Oscars, no. DLC, of course, is your downloadable Kanata. It is your downloadable Christian. But it is also, this week, DLC means Deputy, Let's Player, and Critic, because we have the Deputy Reviews Editor from Polygon and live streaming gamer extraordinaire, Mr. Phil Kolar. Welcome, Phil.
Thank you guys for having me on the show. I'm really happy to be here. I got to say, I went and tried to do a review on iTunes for this show. Will not let me choose a 7.5. Not interested.
But you can give it a review and then later change it. So that's okay.
All right, great.
Awesome. Well, we have a big, big week this week, because if you've been listening to the show, you know it is now March. And that means it is DLC's first annual March Madness. And what is March Madness? It is where we're pitting games head-to-head in a bracket of the best games. We're going to name the champion of the year based on your voting, based on our discussions. And this week is the first week. We're doing the first half of the bracket in week one. And we'll get to that a little later in the show, but you can already start voting if you are listening live. You can vote. Go over to jeffcannata.com and you can get a link to the live vote that we're doing. You can contribute your opinion. And of course, you can always call into this show to contribute your opinion as well by calling 512-518-5714. We will be taking live callers throughout the show. Again, 512-518-5714. If you're listening to the show downloaded, we welcome you to join in the live discussion by listening to us. We record every Friday. Excuse me, Friday. Where did that come from? Every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, 5x5.tv/live. But we can't start the show without talking about the story of the week.
Story of the week. It's the story of the week. Story of the week. It's the story of the week.
Story of the week, of course, is the segment of the show where we try to convince one another of what the most important story in video gaming or board gaming was this week. We'll have to go through it a little quick this week because we got a lot of March Madness to get to, and there really wasn't that many huge stories. But Phil, I'm curious, what do you think the most interesting, most important story this week was?
To me, in my mind, there is no doubt at all what the story of the week is. Twitch beats Pokemon. Were you guys watching this? Where were
you? I have
you
to admit,
when Twitch
I jumped
beat
in
Pokemon.
I jumped in and watched a little bit, and it's pretty amazing that Twitch beats Pokemon. But I also it also makes me feel really out of touch and strange because I don't get it. I don't understand why people are watching it for that long. Like, I get it. It's fun. It's an interesting novelty, but 9 million viewers? Really?
Yeah. I think it's important to establish early on in the show that you are out of touch. I think that's important to get out of the way.
Right. It's good. Please rate us highly on iTunes. I'm out of touch.
Yes. The thing about it is, so I'm not one of the crazy people who's watching for hours at a time, right? But throughout the, I think it was 15 or 16 days, 16 and a third days, I think it says here, that they were playing. I tuned in, you know, I would tune in sporadically here and there, and I would have it on in the background while I was doing other things. And there's just something incredible about seeing this huge group of people make progress in this game against all odds, against the odds of other people trying to stop them from making progress. I don't know. For me, that was like an incredible thing and an incredible, like, I like it because of how weird it is. Mm-hmm. And because it's using Twitch in a way that I don't think Twitch or anyone ever intended Twitch to be used for.
I have a couple of questions for you because we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when this, you know, first popped up on the radar, and I asked the question, like, is this a thing? Like, is this a one-off novelty, or is it really a harbinger of something new and unique? And are we going to see sort of a redefinition of what massively multiplayer can mean? Can it be a massive amount of people are all playing the same game at the same time? Do you think it's more than just a one-off kind of situation?
Well, it's interesting. So now Twitch Plays Pokemon has moved on to Pokemon Crystal.
Right.
So they're going to keep going. Twitch themselves, the company, has been trying to, you know, as they've been talking about this and kind of catching on to it as a phenomenon, they've been giving interviews talking about, you know, the viability of Twitch as a gaming platform. I'm a little skeptical of that, but I do think that this opens the road for other things. So like we've seen, I believe it's the team working on a game called Daylight. It's a horror game coming out later this year. They're putting in something in the game that allows for when people are streaming it on Twitch, people in the chat can type things and it will make stuff happen in the game to like freak out the person playing.
Oh, wow.
So I think there's a lot of room that Twitch Plays Pokemon opens up for stuff like that, for ways that new games that are being made can be built to interact with the live viewing audience. As game developers realize, like, hey, video games are something that people are going to be watching now.
Right. I have another question that I wish I had thought of myself, but I think I read someone on Twitter say this, and it really piqued my interest. Legally, and this may not be, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but you know, we have basically the right to play games that we purchase. What is the ramifications of a whole bunch of people kind of playing a game they don't own? Is that a thing?
I don't know. That's the kind of thing, though. That's why I like how weird everything is. The fact that we live in a weird future where that's a question we can ask makes me really happy.
Right.
But I have no clue. I have no clue what the legal ramifications are or if there are any. You know, I think the average developer or publisher isn't going to care, isn't going to go after it at all.
But Nintendo might.
You never know with Nintendo.
Right. What do you think about this, Christian?
I think it was fascinating. It was perfect background, quote unquote, TV. You know, if you're like, for instance, I'm sitting there doing, I do social media work for a couple of people, a couple of like Nerdist stuff properties in LA. So I'm, you know, I'll be toiling away on my computer and like have Twitch running in the background with that. And it's just funny to look up and just see like anarchy, 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 anarchy running down the screen. In terms of something that sit down and watch, yeah, it wasn't like, well, I just finished episode 4 of season 2 of House of Cards. Now for an hour of Twitch Plays Pokemon. Like, I don't think that's its purpose.
And yet people are playing it in massive, or watching it, excuse me, in massive numbers and for long stretches of time. I mean, if this was a television show, it would be huge. It is outranking in pure viewership numbers a lot of really great TV shows that we all enjoy, you know? It's kind of, it's a thing. You got to admit that it is something that people want to watch. I don't know if it's going to, the novelty will wear off and people will abandon it after a while, or if it's here to stay. I have a hard time getting much entertainment other than like, wow, that's kind of cool that that exists. But
well, I think it's the ultimate, you know, or not maybe ultimate, maybe penultimate, maybe someone will do it better. But it's a really refined version of what shows like American Idol and a lot of TV shows where, you know, join the conversation, tweet at us at Sports Nation, ABC or whatever, you know, where call into American Idol to get your vote heard. Or we'll be showing your tweets at the bottom of the screen in the scroll. Like, here's something that you can watch passively, like a daytime TV show or whatever that doesn't require your full attention. Because if you miss 20 minutes and you come back, you probably didn't miss much. Unless they're in the middle, you know, of an important battle or something. But you can have it going, but you can also go in and either help or hinder the progress for a little bit. So it's easy to have going at all the time, and then fun to jump in and actively engage with. And you can actually see, you know, how you're affecting the world. Whereas you can tweet at American Idol a million times, but whether or not that does anything probably isn't going to happen. So I think,
Sing louder. I'll just tweet. It could be like, which plays American Idol?
Yeah.
Exactly. I like what Zach Attack says here in the chat room. He says, I think the most groundbreaking things that happened in the world weren't exactly legal when they started. And that's pretty interesting. All right, Christian, what is your story of the week contender this week?
My story of the week contender is the Nintendo online service for the Wii and DS going away. And I don't know why this felt like a punch to the gut to me, but it did. And maybe it's because I don't own a Wii U, and so I'm not playing that way. And I know these things have to end. Well, I guess that's how it has been, you know, with the original Xbox online service ending. But every time it happens, it's just it's a sad moment. And so it's not ending yet, but they announced the end is coming. And it makes me sad because you see where the hobby that we love so much is right now, where these things can just go away. And it goes also, I think, to the Twitch thing about, or the illegality of people playing games, that a lot of good things do come out of quote unquote illegal actions within gaming in terms of preserving games that may or may not be in that gray area. And now this is gone. You'll never be able to go back and experience these games as they were meant to be played originally. And that makes me sad. So that's why I think it's an important story this week.
Yeah, you know, of course, DLC is a show that is decided by listener contribution. And you can submit stories of the week using hashtag DLCSOTW, DLC story of the week, all week long on Twitter. And a lot of people submitted this story. It was submitted by @_BrianHamilton, @PogoBeta, @Veggie2EX, and among others. And I think a lot of people responded to this. It is, I think, it shows the way video games are now. They are not permanent. The impermanence of online play and when games are having to be constantly online, and I think people are seeing that you're not going to be able to play these things forever. You're not going to be able to dig out old technology, plug it in, and just be able to play it. And I think that's a sad state of affairs for the hobby we all love. Phil, do you have a feeling about this?
Yeah, so Silent Dante in the chat says, it's just a reminder that nothing lasts forever. We all die, and no one remembers after a time. So, you know, I think on this Monday morning, it's nice to lighten the mood a little, let everyone remember that we're all mortal. Everything is going to fade away. So, you know, no reason to care about anything. I think for me, the big question with the Wii and DS thing, I agree with everything you guys have said. I think it is sad, and I think it's something that I like seeing people trying to preserve this stuff, or, you know, like running their own like pirate servers of stuff that no longer exists. But with the Wii and DS, I've got to ask, like, what online stuff is there that like people? Right. I mean, like that, you know, like if Xbox or Xbox Live for 360 or PlayStation Network for PS3 went down, there's a lot of online only games on those, or online focused games, let's say, on those systems that I think it would be really sad to be missing out on that component. There's not that much with the Wii.
Yeah. Yeah, and evidently the shopping channels and the stuff like Netflix and Hulu and YouTube are still usable and still working. Yeah. So it's not so much that. It's just whatever the few friends yeah. code-enabled multiplayer games that were on the Wii.
Pain brings yeah. up, Pain in the chat brings up Mario Kart Wii, and I think Smash Bros. For Wii also. I think both of those had online modes. Those are legitimate online games, but
sure.
I don't know if I would say online focused, I guess, in the way that I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is certainly the console with the least to lose in that regard, as you said. But it's also interesting that Nintendo has positioned the Wii U as this upgrade to the Wii. So I wonder if it's a way to propel people, especially on the verge of Mario Kart being released, say, hey, you want to keep playing Mario Kart online? Get the new one. Upgrade. I don't know. Perhaps.
Yeah, I think that might be something. I think, and Nintendo's not doing great right now. I think, I'm sure that's not the only reason that they're doing this, but I could totally see that being part of the reason, just out of a desperation to push people to upgrade however they can.
Yeah.
I mean, all companies do this. This isn't like let's bag on Nintendo again. EA often does this with their sports games. As I said, Microsoft did this pretty quickly, I think, in the scheme of things with the original Xbox, just the entirety of the original Xbox going away. And so it's not like this is Nintendo doing this horrible, horrible thing, but I think every time it happens, it does. It just reminds you of where gaming is going and always online or interconnected or, Titanfall coming out soon, when or if that happens to that game. It's just, it's sad because these are such great experiences oftentimes. And then when they have an end point that isn't decided by the chip decaying or the physical thing wearing out or becoming unreadable, it's just, oh, well, this is expensive, switch off. And yeah, that's why I think it's set.
I think you're right. And I think it doesn't just the thing that kind of freaks me out about it going forward into the future is that it's not just stuff that applies to multiplayer focused games either. It's not just stuff where like, oh, it's going to be really hard to find a Call of Duty match, 10 years from now. There's stuff like, for example, I've been playing a lot of Assassin's Creed 4, and that game is so tightly tied into connecting onto Uplay, and you get all of this bonus content and not just like new areas and stuff, but actual like things that improve the quality of your play experience by being online and connecting to your friends. So it makes me wonder, like, when Assassin's Creed 4 servers go down, 5-10 years in the future, are people at that point going to be able to play this game in the way it was intended at all? Like, is there going to be some sort of fix to do that, or is it just going to be kind of abandoned?
Yeah, it makes the whole hobby seem a lot more disposable than it ever has before. And I think that's a shame, especially yeah. when we seem to be in this era of people appreciating retro in a way that we haven't ever before. So this is weird marriage of the hobby sort of looking back to its roots more often and also feeling like those roots are being severed in a real way, which is a shame. I would like to submit that my story of the week also is a Twitch story, but it is this idea that Twitch is coming to Xbox One. I think at launch, one of the coolest features of the PS4 was the fact that I could just push a button and all of a sudden I'm streaming my game to Twitch. I loved doing that and plan to do lots more of it as there's more stuff to play on these new consoles. And I'm thrilled that as of March 11th, it seems that Xbox One is getting Twitch integration. In fact, it's going to be voice command, which is kind of cool. All you have to do is say Xbox broadcast and it will start broadcasting to Twitch. Sounds pretty cool to me, guys. I'm excited that now this isn't just an exclusive feature to PS4, but does it have ramifications in the console wars? Or is it just a pure positive, now we have parity and everybody can watch everybody play everything?
Well, for now, I mean, PS4 said it's coming, or Twitch said it's coming to PS4, but that, I don't think they've given a date. But I think having it, being able to archive your footage on the Xbox One is a pretty big bonus versus
huge.
The PS4.
Yeah, huge. That's great. I mean, Phil, you're a guy who does tons of Let's Plays. You have a great channel with all your archived Let's Play footage. You can go by game and watch all your cool stuff. Are you digging this?
Yeah, I love anything that makes it easier for more people to get into this. You know, obviously, I think anybody who is doing a stream on PS4 or on Xbox One, just with the stuff that comes in the box with those consoles, it's not going to be the highest quality stream. It's not going to be the best thing in the world, but it might be something that gets them more interested in it and pushes them to, you know, get better equipment in it and improve it from there. I just think opening more people up to that is great. And I've got to agree with what Christian said. The fact that the Xbox One stuff allows you to archive is gigantic. That's really important to a lot of people who are streaming. And honestly, I know a lot of people who own PS4s, have tested it, really enjoyed the streaming process on it, but don't want to do it anymore because they know that once they're offline, that footage is just gone. There's no archiving. And yeah, it's, you know, like Twitch and Sony have said, it's coming to PS4, it's coming, but we don't know when. I honestly think this makes it not just parity, but it makes the Xbox One streaming experience better for the time being.
Interesting. I think that's probably the case. And the fact that you've got a camera in the box, I mean, you know, people complain about the extra $100 having to pay for that camera, but it's certainly nice that I can Twitch stream and have that camera at picture in picture, and I don't have to go out and buy the PS4 camera to do the same thing.
I mean, come on. But buying the PS4 camera, I understand that it's convenient, but it's $60. It'd still be cheaper to do with the PS4 and buy the camera than to buy an Xbox One with the camera.
I agree, but I literally haven't done it yet because I keep forgetting. I haven't gone to the store to do it. I haven't bought it over Amazon. I wanted to buy it over Amazon the first week that I had the PS4, but they were sold out, and so it just kind of went off my radar, and I haven't done it since.
That's true.
Maybe that's a flimsy.
I bought mine, I said, hey, I'm getting mine. Do you want one? And then you were in a text black hole or something. And let me tell you, I use mine all the time to have it not recognize me when I sign in.
Hilarious. Last night when I was watching the Oscars with my feet up on the table, Xbox One kept recognizing that as my hand waving at it, which was very annoying. But that's neither here nor there. A couple of other stories I wanted to bring up because people submitted them using the hashtag DLCSOTW. It sounds like we got a Minecraft movie coming. This was submitted by @RadicalGeek. Notch, the creator of Minecraft, tweeted out that he was the one who wanted to leak the story that Warner Brothers has acquired the rights to a Minecraft movie. And evidently they got the producer of the Lego movie, Roy Lee, to oversee the project, which is encouraging. I think before the Lego movie came out, I would have been very, very skeptical of this as being any good at all. But the Lego movie is so fantastic that now I'm like, maybe it could work. Who knows? What do you guys think?
For me personally, unless the first 40 minutes of the film is just you watching the character chop wood, then it's not true to the Minecraft experience, and then I'm against it.
It's chopping wood for 20 minutes, and then it gets dark, and they have to run into a cave and hide, and the next 20 minutes are just waiting until daylight dawns again.
That sounds perfect. That sounds like the true to the source material Minecraft movie.
Have you seen the new Lego movie yet, Christian?
I have seen the Lego movie. It was very good, but it did not, for me, live up to the hype, mostly because every time we talked, you told me how good it is.
Did you watch my YouTube review of it? Because I may have hyped it a little bit in that. But I didn't think that it could...
Your love fest for the Lego movie where you're making out with your webcam by the end of it? Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
The Lego movie, the talent supposedly, or I guess attached to the Minecraft movie, gives me hope that it can be good, right? Like, this is the type of thing that you want to hear versus, you know, Mark Wahlberg attached, and you're like, oh no, what are they going to do to Minecraft? Hopefully they can, like, things like the Lego movie have shown how you can use a property in a fun way, and you don't need to make it dark and grit. I mean, oh my gosh, the horrible ways that a Minecraft movie could go. If it's like, we really liked the horror aspect of it, and we really just attached ourselves to that, and we think that 3D
this
really
summer,
added a lot. Yeah.
Right. Creepers will be creeping into your living room.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, there is nothing specifically mentioned in this news story about it being an animated movie either, which it better be, because the idea of a live action Minecraft movie is terrifying to me on every level.
Yeah, it's got to be animated or CG. Like, there's no way that it's not.
Right? Can you imagine like a live guy running around like building his block house and
just a guy running around with a pickaxe? Mark Wahlberg running around with a pickaxe.
Oh, it's definitely got to be Mark Wahlberg for sure. Yep. With his diamond armor on. Amazing.
Guys, there are creepers coming. Why are there so many creepers?
Awesome. Let's see. We got another interesting story that the folks over at BioWare are thinking of making Mass Effect on the new consoles, re-releasing the trilogy as a remastered re-release for Xbox One and PS4. Evidently, they released a tweet saying that they have discussed this internally, and if they can put solid plans together, they will share, and they're excited to hear that the community is excited about this. We already know that they're working on whatever the next Mass Effect game is, and we know that that game is going to be on the Frostbite engine rather than the Unreal engine. I'm much more interested in what a new Mass Effect game would be rather than a sort of, I mean, if you want to experience what that old Mass Effect trilogy would look like on the new consoles, I pretty much get it on PC and put all the settings at the top, right? Isn't that what we would have? Or what do you guys think?
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And I think we're also, I just think it's weird that I spent so much time in the last generation waiting for HD re-releases of games that I'd played the generation previous, and now I'm doing it again, sort of. Like, it doesn't right. make it makes even less sense this time. I guess it's cool for anybody who hasn't experienced Mass Effect to get it all in one pack. But it's still,
you can already get it all in one pack. It just, you know, for the consoles that you probably already own.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious, like, what gamer, and I know there are always new gamers coming in that maybe were too young to have played the Mass Effect or you know, for whatever reason, missed them when Mass Effect first came out and want to get back and experience it. But I also don't know if Mass Effect is the type of game that will be timeless, that ages particularly well. I think maybe Mass Effect 2 better than 1. You know, one had, I think, had some pacing problems. I think, Jeff, one is your favorite, but I also think you're wrong.
No, I hated one.
Okay, good. Oh, no, it was awful. I don't know
honestly, I actively disliked Mass Effect 1. I famously went on, I went on one up yours back
it's
in the day.
It's in the Wikipedia.
Right.
I saw it in the picture from the Oscars last night with the selfie. Your one up yours review of Mass Effect 1 was in that.
Anyway, I didn't care for that game. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, so I just don't know. You know, it's also not Earthbound. It's not this long lost franchise. It hasn't seen a release in years, and now it's getting new light. It's like, hey, you know those games that sold millions of copies a few years ago? They're back. Like, no one's like, finally, I can find a copy. But at the same time, I think what they mean by they're having internal meetings is the accounting is looking at, can we make money off this? The amount of work we have to put in, will we sell these? Like, that's all it comes down to. I don't think this is like a passion project for you've asked for it. After 2 years of no Mass Effect, here's more of the original Mass Effect. Like, it just doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think a few people in the chat are pointing out, like Chino says, I think it's a cash-in, but I like Mass Effect, so I might buy it. I'm part of the problem. I want to make 100% clear. I think it's the goofiest, least necessary thing ever. I will also probably buy it, so I'm 100% part of the problem.
You guys are not helping in any way. I want to say that we are going to get to all the people on hold. I want to have everybody's opinion during March Madness. We'll get your votes and stuff. So hang on the line there. We're going to get to some games we played because that pretty much does it for Story of the Week. But first, we have to thank our sponsor New Relic. They've been with us from the beginning. We love New Relic. And if you've got a web or mobile application, you need to know about New Relic. New Relic is a developer's best friend because it has easy-to-use analytics that gives developers powerful code-level visibility into the real-time performance of their apps. That means you can spot bugs, see bottlenecks, and fix problems fast before they ever affect your user. Thanks to New Relic, you no longer have to ship an app to production and then helplessly wait around hoping for the best until negative app reviews and tweets start to pour in. New Relic empowers software engineers by showing them what's wrong and what isn't all in real time. It's really straightforward. New Relic gives developers a lightweight agent that you unpack into your production-level apps. The agent sits quietly and securely in the background, gathering real-time metrics across geographies, devices, platforms, all the way down to the end-user level, and then displays all that data in real-time graphs so that coders have total visibility into the performance of their web and mobile applications. So go check out New Relic. Go to newrelic.com/DLC to learn more and use the offer code DLC30. That way you can take advantage of a special 30-day extended free pro trial. It's available exclusively to listeners of DLC. Build better performing apps, get deeper insights, spot bottlenecks quickly, and improve performance with New Relic. Again, that's newrelic.com/DLC and the promo code DLC30. New Relic has supported us from the beginning, and we hope that you support them because they make this show possible. All right, dudes. I know you guys have been playing some great games. I've been in Palm Springs all week performing shows like a madman. But I want to hear about some big stuff that you guys are playing. Phil, Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2. Is it worth unpacking my PS3 for, plugging it back in?
No, do not do that. I reviewed Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2 for Polygon.com. And I was a big fan of the first Lords of Shadow. I went in not really expecting to like it because, hey, 3D Castlevania, why would you expect to like that? But it turned out really good, I thought. Lords of Shadow 2 is not very good. It has a lot of problems. It gets rid of the so Lords of Shadow 1 was very linear, but it put that to good use because you went through all these different environments and it was really just this really beautiful epic journey. Lords of Shadow 2 is more of an open world, but there's only two environments, and one of them is a modern day, like, sort of cross between New York City and London, modern day grimy city. And it's super boring. It's just gray alleys and sewers and factories. Just the most generic, boring video game settings you can think of. It just doesn't pay off on any of the interesting stuff that the first Lords of Shadow had.
Hmm.
Have you followed any of this stuff, Phil, with like developers from Mercury Steam coming out and saying how horrible the process was?
I saw that popping up in some forums. I was trying to figure out where it actually originated from and couldn't find that. So I was I have a journalist skepticism of, like, is this legitimate and everything, but I would believe it. I would believe that process that's being described in these forum posts, which, you know, they basically are saying, like, that there were a handful of people at Mercury Steam, the developer, who forced some really bad decisions, basically. One of the reasons I would say not to play the game, it's a Castlevania game, ton of stealth. Stealth in a Castlevania game.
That's weird.
I mean, it's what the series is known for.
How do you make your whip quiet?
I don't know. It's
by whipping it good.
You transform into a rat.
The game feel, because some of the stuff, you know, true or not, whether these are from people that worked on the game, but they said, you know, the art style, I haven't played it, but the art style was different because of art directors leaving and parts of the game felt disjointed. I mean, in your playthrough, is stuff like that apparent where it's like, this is almost a totally different style of game? I mean, I guess you mentioned the stealth stuff. Is
it? Yeah, so you literally hop back and forth between two areas, which is the city that I mentioned previously and then the castle in the title, Castlevania. The bits in the castle in particular feel like the level design is a lot better, a lot more interesting, a lot nicer to look at, just more variety. You're going to like all these different locations in the castle that look really interesting and beautiful. And you don't get that in the city as much. So I could definitely see that. I could see those two areas having been designed by different art directors.
Well, I'm worried that we're going to stay on the negative tip right now, but I gave Christian my review copy of Thief. I was excited about it. And Christian, I'm worried that you won't like it. Have you been playing it?
I'm surprised you didn't say the four. I know you're a fan of shoving numbers into words of games.
The four.
I've been playing it on PS4, as you mentioned. We did not pay for this copy of the game, and you've probably already seen some reviews floating around the internet. Not floating around; they've been published. they're readily available on the internet. I'm about a third of the way through the game. And while I understand many of the criticisms that are in these reviews, I am enjoying the game much more than I thought I was going to. Because, you know, it's hard not to let a bunch of negative reviews, a lot of fairly low reviews, impact or affect your expectation when you sit down to play a game. And it's not perfect. It has some polish problems for sure. I've had a few weird animation glitches, and at first the world seems kind of cool as you're listening to people in the streets talk, and then you realize that every single guard you encounter is I'm about to have a tooth pulled, and I think they had one guy for 1 hour in a VO booth, and he just kind of cranked it out, and there are a lot of those problems.
Maybe there's just a massive dental problem in their world.
What there should be in this world is massive respiratory problems, because I understand it's like the revolutionary or the industrial revolution, but man, talk about dust everywhere. You peep through keyholes to look around, and like your eye you just have to get so many dust particles in your eye, because apparently they're floating everywhere and you can't avoid it. But so the game, well, let me ask you guys this. Are you guys well versed in Thief? Are you like Thief fans
from back in the day? Yeah.
Okay. So
I'm not. I'm not a big stealth gamer, so I haven't really touched too much of the series.
So this game, yes, is definitely stealth, but what's weird is you go into a castle and then you're slaying vampires and it's all action. I would love that if somehow this game turned into Lords of Shadows 2. This game is very stealthy. In combat, this isn't Dishonored. You can't really get out of a situation if you get spotted. You die quickly and often if you go into hand-to-hand combat with guards. So it very much, to me, these are both third-person action games I'm about to describe, and D4 is first-person. But it's very much, to me, a throwback to the original Metal Gear Solid and the original Splinter Cell, where you're memorizing AI routines, you're planning your route, and you're trying to decide how you want to attack a room, and it's slow. And that's the pace of the game, at least through the first third for me. And if you enjoy that, I think you can get a lot of fun out of Thief. If you don't enjoy that type of game, and a lot of games have moved away from this, games like Dishonored and even the Splinter Cell games themselves, and Metal Gear Solid too, have moved away from that approach. And so what I think is interesting about this game is, Jeff, it kind of answers our question last week to some extent, like who wants a new Doom? And who wants, now they've said it's a mobile-only game, a new Tony Hawk. And I think that Thief, while fondly remembered, isn't necessarily the game that gamers want today. And so...
But you're liking it.
I am liking it. I would have to say, though, with my real-world budget, if I'm looking at Thief being out right now and knowing that Titanfall, Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes, and Infamous come out in just a few short weeks, I do not like Thief enough to recommend buying this game unless you have enough disposable income to also get those other games that I mentioned. Like, I'm much more excited for those other games than I am enjoying Thief, if that makes sense.
Tell me what you like about it. Tell me what you are enjoying.
I like stealth games. So I like that it's fun to go into a room and leave without anyone ever seeing you and pulling off, you know, a heist or, you know, getting in and out. The story is ridiculous, but it's the moment to moment fun that's cool, where you creep into a room, you look around, you know what tools you have, you know which arrows you have. I mean, you have choke arrows. I mean, come on, that's always a good thing. And then you survey and you figure out the route you want to take, and there are multiple routes. And that, to me, is enjoyable, but it's very slow. And if you don't like that, you won't like this game. But I really liked the original Splinter Cell. I like that kind of game. And it's not an ugly game. It's not the prettiest game I've ever played, but it looks good on PS4. It's on Unreal Engine 3, and occasionally you will see some, you know, Unreal pop in, but because I've been taking the game so slowly in my movement, it hasn't been bad. So it's not perfect. It doesn't live up, and no different teams or whatever, but it's not the standard that was set by Tomb Raider as an Eidos game, but it's, I think, better than Hitman in terms of my enjoyment of it. And, you know, when it goes on sale, and if you're a fan of a slow-paced stealth game, I would definitely say check it out.
Cool. Phil, what else are you playing?
So I've been playing a bunch of Bravely Default. I don't know if you guys have chatted about this at all yet.
I just downloaded it. I have not started it yet. I just downloaded it, so I'm excited. Am I going to love it?
I really like it. I think if you have any love for old school RPGs, old school Japanese RPGs, this game is fantastic. It feels like the first time that I played Final Fantasy way back on the NES. Like it's, you know, it's very simplistic. It's very grindy at points. But in a way that I kind of like with my handheld RPGs, because I can just kind of you know, lay in bed or sit on the couch watching a TV show and, you know, grind out some levels, not pay too much attention, and then be able, when I'm paying attention later, to actually make some progress. I'm really loving it. It's got a really great job system, really beautiful also. One of the best looking games on the 3DS, I think. The art is just gorgeous. So yeah, I highly recommend Bravely Default if you like JRPGs at all. Also cool. Throw in, I've been playing a little bit of a game coming out that I can't quite talk about too much, but I'll mention it. Dark Souls 2.
Oh my God. You can't talk about it, but you were,
I can't talk about
Souls.
It too much. But I, you know, I, man, it's Dark Souls 2. I've been dying a lot.
This just in, Dark Souls 2 kills you a lot.
I don't know if I'm going to get hit by the NDA police for that, but,
okay.
Yo, I died a lot in Dark Souls 2.
I'm excited to hear what you think of it because you were such a fan of Dark Souls.
Definitely a title that I'm very excited to start writing my review and get that out there.
Awesome. When can we expect that?
That'll be up next week. The game comes out, I believe, next week on Tuesday. Does that sound right? Yeah. And yeah. I think the review will be up on Tuesday as well.
Very, very cool. All right, dudes, let's move right into March.
March.
Madness.
Madness.
This is going to be a tough one. We have a lot of games to get through. Here's the way it's going to work. We took submissions of all the games that should be part of March Madness this year. We got votes for all those games, and we ranked them by seeding, just like you would in the NCAA tournament. That bracket with the seeding went up on my website, jeffcanada.com. You can check that out there. A bunch of people have sent in their brackets. We're giving away three awards for the top three brackets, and they are the Titanfall book, which is going to be the Art of Titanfall book, which was offered up from Titan Press to us as a prize, which we're excited to award out to the top three brackets. But we have to decide who's going to win the first week of matchups. So we're doing just one half of the bracket this week. We'll do the other half of the bracket next week for the first round. This is the Kanata division we're starting with. If you want to follow along, if you're listening live, if you want to follow along, head over to jeffkanata.com. There's a post, the second post down is DLC March Madness. It has a link to the bracket. It has a link to the new voting you can do. So if you're listening live, hop on that voting. We've already had hundreds of votes come in, and they're going to help influence our decision on which games should win. So let's get started right away, guys, with the very first top matchup. Top seed, number one seed of the whole tournament, a perennial favorite, Super Mario 64, against media darling, Phil Kohler's favorite, Dark Souls. So we're starting off with a hard one right away. I'm hoping people are voting right now. I can tell you the early votes are pretty close. Super Mario 64 is at 67%. Dark Souls is at 33%. So Mario 64 is winning. It is the top seed. But I want to hear what you guys think. Phil, you think Mario 64 should beat Dark Souls?
Oh, man. So just in general, these matchups are really tough. Here's the thing. I think historically, Mario 64 is probably the more important game. But I think in terms of if you're actually looking at which of these two games is better, I think Dark Souls beats Mario 64. I think Mario 64 is an excellent game, but it's an early 3D game, right? There's a lot of stuff they didn't have figured out yet. There's a lot of wonky camera stuff. There's a lot of there's things about Mario 64 that I think are hard to go back to. Whereas if you go back to Dark Souls, still holds up today, this many years later.
It came out like a couple of years ago.
Still holds up.
And there are still things about Dark Souls that people haven't figured out today. Are you saying people haven't figured out things?
Exactly. Still mystery in that game. Still, everybody's right. Torn apart Mario 64. They've flipped it inside out. They've beat it in 3 minutes or whatever the crazy world record is. Dark Souls still discovering things.
Phil's argument: Mario old, Dark Souls new. I would like to point out that I think that Mario 64 deserves to be on this list, deserves to be the number one seed because it is such an impactful, precedent-setting, genre-defining game that had ramifications for years and years to come. But I think Dark Souls is going to be the same thing. I honestly think that Dark Souls we're going to feel the ramifications of that game for a decade. There's going to be games like it. It's kind of carving out a new genre, new subgenre on its own. I think this, you know, you love Cinderella stories. This could be a Cinderella. Christian, what do you think? Did you play Dark Souls?
Very little. Very,
yeah,
very
me
little
too. Me very little, but I sort of recognize that it's important. I never really got over that hump of you know, enjoyment.
What genre is it creating? It popularized what other games were already doing.
Interesting.
Right. And
I don't know if I would say it. Like,
you're right. It wasn't that popular of a game. It has a really strong niche internet following, but it didn't move big numbers. I agree. Thanks, Phil. Thanks for saying that.
Yikes. You're hurting me right now. my thing, I think I agree with Jeff. I think, I mean, you're right, Christian. It's not like it sold Super Mario 64 numbers. It sold a lot, but it's not like crazy huge Call of Duty numbers. But I think the crowd with which it is popular is people who are really passionate about games. I think a lot of game creators, it's really popular with them. And I think that's why what Jeff said is correct. I think you're going to start seeing. I think just in the coming, like the next year or two is when we're really going to start seeing lots and lots of games that have little things that are like, oh, this was clearly inspired by Dark Souls, or like this is something that they picked up from Dark Souls and revised this game.
You can't vote for something because you think something's going to happen in the future when Mario 64 has had that happening to it for the past 10, 15, 20 years or whatever it's been. Like, Mario 64 has done that, and now you guys are, you know, hoping that this is going to happen with Dark Souls too. Dark Souls is an important game, and unfortunately it got matched against maybe the second or third most important game ever made. If Mario 64 doesn't win this contest is rigged and stupid, just like the real March Madness brackets.
I have to say, the review or the voting is pouring in. We're getting more and more as we speak, and Mario 64 is actually gaining on its lead. So Phil and I arguing for Dark Souls did nothing. It is now up to 66.5%. So I think we have to give the winner to Super Mario 64 and move on to the next title. Sorry, Dark Souls. I thought you could be the darling, the Cinderella. But the audience disagrees. All right. Next up. This is crazy. This is two first-person shooters, two relatively new games. Just the luck of the draw happened that they went up against one another. We have number 8 seed Halo and number 9 seed BioShock. Now, both of these games are sort of representing their entire franchises because Halo 2, Halo 3, they all got votes, and it sort of bumped up Halo's initial ranking as well because we didn't want to put multiple Halos in the list. So Halo just nudged out BioShock, but also BioShock Infinite got a few votes in the initial voting. So this is a rough one for me, Halo and BioShock. Let's see what you guys think before we even say where the voting is sitting right now. Phil, what do you think?
I'm going to keep siding with the one that's probably going to lose. BioShock is my choice, and the reason being, somebody in the chat said it, and I completely agree. I think this is Mind Riot said it. Halo's overrated. I think Halo.
Whoa.
I think if you only played console games, then when Halo came out, it was like eye-opening, incredible experience. If you had any experience at all with PC games when Halo came out, it was like, okay, this is all right. This is on par with some of the stuff that I've been playing on PC, but still not quite up to that level.
I don't know if I agree with that, sir. I'm a PC gamer from the dawn of PCs, and I was playing first-person shooters and loving them. And Halo came out, and I bought an Xbox on launch day, and I played Halo, and I was like, holy crap. I can't believe this works on consoles as well as it does. And B, the integration of vehicles and the input and output and the level of scale and all that stuff, even if this had been just a PC release, I think that game would have been extremely popular and a sort of watershed game.
I think it would have been, if it had been a PC release, I think it would have been great. I think it would have gotten great reviews. I don't think historically people would still be talking about it. Like, I think the reason it's on here is just because it does so much stuff for multiplayer on consoles, on that platform specifically. And I don't think it's that great. I really don't. Whereas BioShock, I suppose I should argue the actual reason I'm picking BioShock too. BioShock, mm-hmm. I think, did so much to push forward the focus on narrative in AAA games and on making that something that people actually care about.
Christian?
I wish that I could vote for BioShock single player and Halo's multiplayer. I think that while, yes, PC gaming, I mean, Unreal was bringing people together and over the internet to play multiplayer games. I know a different style of multiplayer first-person shooter, but it was doing that for years before Halo and doing it well. But I gave a toast at my friend Adam Davis's wedding this past weekend. And in my wedding toast, I mentioned there was a shout out to all of us on the track team at Rice playing Halo. We would bring TVs over, Xboxes over. We would go on track trips. We would pack an Xbox with us and things like that. The way it might have just brought it over to the console space, but the way it created, aside from, you know, obviously there's GoldenEye and N64, but the fans that it created of that first person shooter and defined for years until Call of Duty redefined it, and kudos to Call of Duty for planting its flag. But the control scheme for console first person shooters, I think, is super important.
Listen to what Tactical Bacon 00 said in the chat room. He says, "What about how Halo started the whole red versus blue and machinima thing? Halo was so influential in online video." Interesting.
Yeah, I think Halo is big. I personally hate Halo's one story. I hate the single player. Aside that you could play it, co-op was fun. The library is a mess. The Flood have been the worst enemies that you fight in a video game, maybe of all time. BioShock
really?
1 was
I wouldn't go that
amazing.
Far.
But if I had to vote on this, which I already did vote on this, I vote for Halo. but it's close. Man, it's close. If I, which game do I personally enjoy more? BioShock 1. But I think Halo has done more for the industry, and the multiplayer is too big to overlook.
I think BioShock is an easy pick. Honestly, I love Halo, and I've been arguing for the significance of Halo. But BioShock is in my top five games of all time. The original BioShock. I just love narratively what it did, how it commented on interactivity itself, and not only that, it introduced a wonderful series of mechanics. I mean, I loved the way it married together the use of superpowers with shooting and. Exploring that undersea world was so interesting and so atmospheric and drew me in such a large sense. I mean, I liked exploring the world of Halo as well, but I have to say, guys, this is a close vote right now. We're at 56% for BioShock, 43% for Halo. So I think BioShock's going to take it. Bunch more votes just got in. Yep, no, didn't move the needle too much. It's almost half and half now, but BioShock just edges out Halo. Sorry, Halo fans. All right, moving on to the next matchup. We have number 5 seed Fallout 3 up against number 12 seed Doom. I have a feeling I know where this is headed, but let me just speak on Doom's behalf. Just briefly, Doom is a pretty influential first-person shooter. Yes, it's simple. Yes, it hasn't really taken the genre very far forward. But, you know, back when I was a young person, we get together those Doom LAN parties and play Doom multiplayer. It was so much fun. Doom really opened up the entire first-person shooter genre and made it a viable, you know, this sort of... this behemoth that has taken control of the industry in a large way. I mean, there was a good 10-15 years there where first-person shooters were it, and they're still kind of only it. And I think that's all because of Doom, really. I mean, it goes Wolfenstein 3D, it goes Quake, and then it goes Doom. You know, that's the hierarchy of the genesis of first-person shooters. It's a pretty significant game. I get it. Fallout 3 is amazing. What do you think, Phil?
Yeah, I mean, this is these are brutal matchups. This is such a tough thing. I mean, if we're talking influence, Doom wins hands down. It had such a huge impact on the industry as a whole. And I love Doom personally. It's something that I played a ton as a kid. I've returned to constantly, and I always have fun when I return to it. Doom is one of the only games where I have the maps for like the first four levels just permanently etched into my brain. At any point, I can turn on Doom and I can go right through the first four levels without even thinking about it. It's just automatic. It's all there. That game is incredible. That said, Fallout 3 is probably my favorite game of this past generation of consoles. I adore Fallout 3, and you know, given the choice, if I'm somebody asks me, Phil, you can play Doom or you can play Fallout 3, what are you going to play right now? I think 90% of the time I'm going to say Fallout 3.
This episode is also brought to you by Squarespace. I'm so excited to have Squarespace as a sponsor for DLC. I love Squarespace. I've been using it for years and years, all the way back to the Totally Rad Show days. I have my personal blog on Squarespace. I use Squarespace literally every single day, and I wouldn't have it any other way. It's great. It makes it easy to make something that looks awesome on the web. Squarespace, of course, is the all-in-one platform that allows you to create your own website. And I use it. I use it for JeffCanada.com. I use it for every website. Even and when anybody ever asks me, hey, I want to make a website, I always say Squarespace. It's the easiest. It's the best. And you can do a free trial that doesn't even require a credit card. Plus, because you're a listener of DLC, we'll give you 10% off. All you got to do is go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code GROK. G-R-O-K, GROK. Not sure why they chose that. Probably because I say Grok all the time when I'm talking about board games. And Squarespace is fantastic. They are constantly updating their platform with new features, new designs, more support. They have the best customer support in the business. They have beautiful templates for you to start with, tons of style options for you to adjust. It's so easy to create your own website. All you got to do is basically drag and drop stuff. It's amazing. It's so easy to add content right from your desktop, rearrange elements. It's all WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. Squarespace makes sure that your site automatically looks great on any device as well, because every Squarespace website has its own unique mobile design. You can easily connect Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Instagram, Google, you name it. All the best web and social services, easy plug and play, just makes it so great. Squarespace also has e-commerce on their platform, so if you want to set up shop and sell things, you can do so in just a few minutes. It's super easy. Honestly, I love Squarespace. This is so easy for me to recommend. And right now, Squarespace fanatics, now is the time you can apply to be part of the Squarespace team. Squarespace is looking to hire 30 engineers and designers by March 15th. That means they're inviting potential candidates, that's you, and their spouses to be New Yorkers for the weekend, completely on them. You want to hang out with little Ryan and gaze upon his long, luxurious locks in real life? Then check out beapartofit.squarespace.com to learn more. Now, try Squarespace for free, no credit card required, and if you decide to purchase, it starts at just $8 a month. It includes a domain name, and if you sign up for a year, you can make sure to get 10% off and support the show by using the promo code GROK, G-R-O-K. So thank you to Squarespace. We love them. Thank you for supporting 5x5 and DLC. We appreciate it. All right, I'm going to go to the phones now. I know we decided the first two, but I'm going to let people comment on any of the first three matchups that we've got here. We got somebody from 647. You're on the line. Okay, hello. Tell me, did we get those wrong? Super Mario 64, BioShock, and now we got Fallout 3 versus Doom. What are your comments on those three matchups?
Hey, guys. I would have to say that I think you pretty much got it right, but I don't know. I'm still a little bit partial to Halo myself.
Yeah, you take Halo over BioShock, huh?
Yeah, like Halo, but that's because I haven't really, I played BioShock, but I was never really drawn into it. Well, Halo to me was such an influential game. It's like I believe it was Christian was saying, like you grabbed your consoles and you brought them over to your friend's house and you linked them together. In the comments I said that it's basically Halo is essentially to multiplayer console first person shooters as what BioShock was to single player first person shooters on consoles. Like they're kind of equal heavyweights, but in different categories, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think this is like a buzzer beater. This is the last that goes down to the wire, and it's a tough decision. What do you think about Fallout 3 versus Doom? Is that easy for you or hard?
Doom, I think, was more influential to me as a gamer than Fallout 3 was. Like, I did play Fallout 3, but I don't think Fallout 3 would be the Fallout 3 that we knew it as if Doom hadn't existed.
Wow, great point. Christian, what do you think, Fallout 3 or Doom?
So, to let you know that you shouldn't listen to anything that I say, I bought a Sega 32X to play Doom. So I make bad decisions, is what I'm saying. Doom is such a classic game in my heart. It plays such an important role in my life. I love Doom so much. Fallout 3 is the game that I would vote for in this scenario because it probably is. Yeah, like I said in the chat, this isn't the end all be all. This isn't what's the best game ever. This is fun. This is discussing merits of games. And yes, you're going to have discrepancies between newer games and old games. And how can you compare these games like this? Fallout 3 wins. Like that. That's how you do it. And it's just for fun. And Doom is a great game. Take nothing away from it. But Fallout 3.
Yeah, I think it's unanimous as far as the three of us are concerned. I'm taking Fallout 3 as well. I think what it did with the Fallout franchise was pretty remarkable. Revitalizing that franchise, taking it into the 3D world, and making a really deep, interesting role-playing game in a first-person perspective. It's such a rich, deep, interesting world. It's one of my favorite games of the generation. Doom is great, but I think it is only great because of what because it was a stepping stone to the next things. So the audience agrees with us, guys. 63% for Fallout 3, 37% for Doom.
So that's actually closer than I expected.
You know, the early voting, Fallout was at like 80%, and Doom had a bit of a comeback, maybe because of all the stuff we were talking about, but Fallout looks to be the winner. All right, next matchup, we've got number 4 seed Red Dead Redemption versus distant underdog, it seems to me, number 13 seed Persona 4. Phil, were you a fan of Persona 4?
Persona 4 Golden, the Vita re-release, is the only game that I've ever given a 10 out of 10 on Polygon.com.
Yowza. So, well, a lot of people agree with you because it got a lot of votes just to even get into the tournament. I mean, you'll notice there are a ton of deserving games that did not even make the top 32 that got into the tournament. I mean, games like World of Warcraft, there's not a single turn-based, there's not a Civ on this list. This game beat out a lot of games, so a lot of people agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, brutal choice. I love Red Dead Redemption. Definitely one of my favorite games of this generation. Persona 4 is, in my mind, one of the best JRPGs in the last decade. It's one of the few JRPGs that I can point to and say, this is must play. Even if you're not a huge fan of the genre, I think Persona 4 is something everybody should experience. And it's one of the few video games that I think really plays around with the narrative in interesting ways and really focuses on making you make friends with characters and learn these characters as people. Rather than just making a game rather than just having a story that is about, getting revenge or something like that. Although Red Dead Redemption also does some really interesting narrative stuff. So it's difficult.
But you would pick Persona?
Persona 4 is my choice. It's got to be my choice as the RPG guy, or I will be thrown out of the club.
Christian, do you believe in miracles?
Well, this is an easy one for me. Which one of these games has come out on Vita? I mean, really, that's what this whole contest comes down to. It was a version lover. Released on Vita. Persona 4 is a great game, and if you even think you might like a JRPG, you need to play it. Red Dead Redemption, if people know me and know my opinions, they know I generally do not like most Rockstar games. Red Dead Redemption is phenomenal. And it is the only Rockstar game that I would recommend to friends to play, aside from like the cultural importance of what Grand Theft Auto is doing. You can look at these prostitutes, bro. Red Dead wins this for me because it kept me interested. It kept me entertained throughout. I didn't even get bored in Mexico. I thought the world, riding a horse, I didn't want fast travel. I never used fast travel, and it did what no other Rockstar or really open world game was able to do for me, where I bought into the world and I just enjoyed experiencing it. And Persona 4 is a fantastic game, but Red Dead gets my vote.
Oh man, I am embarrassed to say I never played Persona 4. So I have a hard time even voting in this category. Red Dead Redemption was my favorite game that year. I gave it my game of the year, and it's a spectacular achievement. But it's hard. I mean, I can't really vote against a game I haven't played. So why don't I go to the phones and see? I'm looking for somebody that's actually played Persona that I can give my vote to.
You mean Phil or somebody?
Well, no, because you guys are 1-1. We got to have the tie-breaking vote. You're on the line from 407. Have you played Persona? four.
Unfortunately not, guys. Even though I am a Vita owner and I have.
I'm going to put you back on hold. We'll come back to you for another question, but I want to find somebody on the line that has played Persona 4 Golden.
He had a Vita. How could you put him on hold? Come on.
720, you are. Have you played Persona 4 Golden?
Nope. On to the next person.
On to the next person. Okay, we'll come back.
This is my favorite segment of the show.
850, have you played Persona 4 Golden?
No, I haven't. On to the next person.
Someone's going to lie. Someone is going to lie. Phil, we have to ask them questions to make sure they've played it.
All right. 412, have you played Persona 4 Golden?
I watched my brother play a lot of it, and I played the fighting game.
I'll take it.
All right. My thought on it is Red Dead probably deserves to win it just because it was the big Western that we never gotten. Persona 4 is good from what I saw, and I did play a little bit, but I think it's just it's a matter of genre preference for me because I prefer an open world Western shooter than I would old school JRPG. At least at that time, I did. So that's where my vote goes.
All right, we got somebody guessing they just called because they have actually played it.
Oh, sure.
So I'm going to go and just check. 303, did you play Persona 4 Golden?
Of course I played Persona 4
Golden.
Yeah,
all right.
Yes.
You have my vote. Use it wisely. Red Dead Redemption or Persona 4 Golden?
Wait, have you played Red Dead Redemption?
I'm in the chat.
Have you played Red Dead Redemption? Have you played Red Dead Redemption?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Man,
okay,
I'm a gamer. I play all these games.
Great.
All right, so what I was going to say, I was saying in the chat, I'm the guru in the chat. For me, like, I agree with Christian. I'm not big on Rockstar games at all. I don't like GTA. I've tried. The only one I beat was the 80s one, Vice City. But I really did like Red Dead Redemption. But Persona 4 goes down for me as my favorite JRPG that I've ever played. And I'm 40 years old, and I've been playing JRPGs since the 80s. So for me, it was the ultimate. And the big reason that you guys already touched on is the relationship stuff, right? So it's you form these relationships with these people. You know them. You know their fears, their likes, their dislikes. You know all the stuff about them. And I think it, more than any other JRPG especially, just gives you like a bond you with the characters. And so when things happen to them, or something bad happens to them, or something good happens to them, you're emotionally invested.
So what do you think is the better of the two games? Which game should progress in our tournament?
Persona 4.
All right. You heard it there. I got bad news for you guys. The statistics are Red Dead Redemption at 80%, Persona at 20%. But we can
nullify.
We can overrule the will of the people, should we so desire.
I think that's about right, though, Jeff, because I bet 80% have played Red Dead and about 20% have played Persona. I mean, Persona was an Atlas release. It got a re-release on Vita. So many of those people own so many Vitas. Red Dead's a great game.
What do you guys think? I mean, I feel like it's 2-1 because I gave my vote to that guy. Although I did go searching for someone that would probably vote that way. This could be I could get a lot of emails about this if we let Persona 4.
I think here's the thing is, I think it's, as much as I adore Persona 4, I think it should move on. I think Red Dead, if the people say Red Dead, I think Red Dead deserves it. It's not like Red Dead is a terrible game, except for Mexico.
All right. The people have
Red
spoken.
Red Dead probably deserves it.
Well done, guys. All right, the next matchup is hotly contested in the voting. This is two wildly different games, but both very, very influential in their respective genres and in history, really, of video games. We got the number 5 seed Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare up against number 11 seed Shadow of the Colossus. What do you think, Phil?
Shadow of the Colossus for me, for sure. I love Modern Warfare. That was definitely an eye-opening game for me. you know, I played a ton of that, but Shadow of the Colossus, just in terms of art direction, in terms of narrative, and in terms of just taking the idea of a boss fight and boiling down a game to, like, let's just the boss fights, I think is such a cool thing. It's so different than anything else. Nothing has even really captured that to this day. It's still singular, whereas Call of Duty is now everywhere. Every first-person shooter, every military first-person shooter is Call of Duty now. So Shadow of the Colossus gets my vote.
What do you think, Christian?
It's almost sad that Call of Duty gets taken down a peg, and I think I agree with Phil at its success, because there's one every year. Games, almost every game has copied the left trigger, right trigger control scheme, you know, aim and shoot, and that hurts Call of Duty 4's legacy, which I guess makes sense. It's kind of been stepped on and run every which way and torn up and shred and spun off this way and spun off that way. Shadow of Colossus got me teary-eyed. They never came out of my eyes. I held them in. It was such a magical game. It's amazing. I probably spent more hours playing the Call of Duty 4 beta than almost any game that I had played around that same time. I loved that beta. It was amazing. But Shadow of the Colossus is a work of art, and it was in a movie with Adam Sandler, and that's why it needs to get my vote. No, Shadow of Colossus. Yeah, Shadow of the Colossus. Am I saying that right? I've said it too many times.
Yes,
it's amazing.
You are.
It's one now of the best games ever made.
Roads. Roads. The funny one.
Millennium Falcon.
407, you're on the line. What do you think? Shadow of the Colossus or Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare?
Hey, guys. I think I agree with Phil Christian about the Shadow of the Colossus being that, you know, that rare gem. I mean, although it's not fair to, like, kind of ding Call of Duty because it's so ubiquitous now because of how common the RPG elements and the XP boosts are, but there's something special about Colossus. And just as a spoiler, I mean, that scene where, you know, the horse falls, I don't think I've ever had an audible gasp like that in such a long time in a game. And that's, like, you know, not even a speaking character, but the bond you form is so exclusively well done up to that point.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I would like to point out that it was the caller who massively spoiled that game, not me. So I had nothing to do with it. I actually came to Shadow of the Colossus late, I'm embarrassed to say. I didn't play it until the re-release, up-resed re-release on PS3, but I adored it. And as much as I think it's easy to overlook how really profoundly different Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare was from the games that came before it in its own series, like, that it really did change things on a lot of levels, and I remember, I think when I reviewed it on TRS, we called it a badass simulator, and it really took the genre in a whole new way. Yes, everything does that now, but that was the game to do it first. Still, Shadow of Colossus is one of those special experiences in video gaming that I think we have all too few of, where you really feel something, and it's a magical game, and the people agree. It is 57% right now against 41% for Call of Duty. So it's a close call, but it is the winner. And this is, I think, a genuine upset. I mean, that's a 11 seed beating a 5 seed. So that's a pretty massive upset. So congratulations to Shadow of the Colossus. Moving on, we got Half-Life 2, the number 3 seed. This is a real high ranking game. Against number 14 seed, Metal Gear Solid. Wow. That's a rough one for me. Half-Life 2 versus Metal Gear Solid.
Half-Life 2, think, next two games. Let's go.
I got to say, I'm with Christian on this. Metal Gear Solid's great. Half-Life 2 is one of the best games ever created, hands down.
Oh, all right, guys. Wow, made it sound easy. Let's see what 720 has to say. What do you think? Is it as easy, cut and dried as these guys are making it out to be, Half-Life 2?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Half-Life 2 as well. You know, just being able, the way it told its story through its just first-person narrative and set pieces, you know, can only really be done in a video game the way it did it. And
and creating a character like Alex, you know, I think it was the first time a lot of us actually fell in love with the video game character.
Well said. Can't argue with you guys. I agree. Half-Life 2 is probably in my top two or three video games ever. And the people agree as well. Half-Life 2, 79%. Metal Gear Solid, 21%. So, wow, I thought it would be a more hotly debated than that, but no need to dilly-dally. Moving on. Resident Evil 2, the 7 seed against Tetris, the 10 seed. I would like to say, right at the top here, I think there is a real argument to be made that Tetris is the greatest video game ever created. I think that people will be playing Tetris as long as there is digital video games made. And I don't think there's another game on this list that you can say that about. I think Tetris will, there will be a form of Tetris on every single device ever made by man, just because it's pure. It's as pure as any card game or any game of tag. You know, it is a pure human experience that is only possible through digital, you know, means. And yet it still retains something that is essential and magical and interactive. I think there's a real argument to be made that Tetris should beat almost anything it comes up against. What do you think, Phil?
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a very good argument for Tetris. I certainly can't say you're wrong about any of that. I think you're absolutely dead on. I'll throw in my support for Resident Evil 2, if only because I love survival horror as a genre. Resident Evil 2 was the game, like literally the actual game that introduced me to survival horror. I didn't play the first Resident Evil. Resident Evil 2 came out and it just pulled me in, and I loved every second of it. But that said, Resident Evil 2 is also the kind of thing where you go back to that now. It's like I mentioned with Super Mario 64 earlier, but even more so to a much, much greater degree, it's tough. It's tough to go back to Resident Evil 2. Whereas Tetris is, it's something that, as you say, everybody's going to be playing forever. I don't think there's ever not going to be some version of Tetris.
I am
Christian, do you agree?
Yeah, I am personally responsible for raising the temperature of the Earth's core by at least half a degree from the amount of batteries I consumed and threw away when I was a kid playing Tetris on my original Game Boy. It's amazing. And if it wins this whole, if it wins the whole March Madness contest, I wouldn't be surprised. It wouldn't be my pick per se, but I could totally support it. And it's amazing. And if I ever own a arcade cabinet, I want it to be a Tetris cocktail cabinet, and it'd be so beautiful.
Wow. I thought that'd be more supportive of Resident Evil 2. I mean, Phil said a little bit, but that's one of the first games. I played that in a dorm room in college, and it was so much fun sitting around, getting scared by the lurker leaping out, have that fun couch situation where one person holds the controller and everybody else is like, oh no, go to the right. Oh, pick up the red card key that's right there. Oh, I remember where that was, but go back. Just a great series, great installment in the series. I think it's a deserving game to be on this list for sure. Just unfortunate. I mean, it's higher seeded than Tetris is. So it would be an upset.
I think there's something to be said too for the fact that, again, looking at Tetris, it's something where looking at the genres, I guess, as somebody who loves survival horror, I can still look at it and admit, like, the survival horror genre has kind of stagnated, and I think there's a reason for that. Whereas the puzzle genre, that the Tetris genre, is never going to really do that. I don't feel like there's always going to be that type of game.
I'd argue just, that Tetris is maybe more of a survival horror game than Resident Evil now. There's nothing scarier than when you're waiting for a straight piece to get that Tetris and you're filling up, and there's nothing
and you're
less
trying to survive.
Scary
yeah. They just need some horror music to start at that point. That would be great.
Exactly. Yeah.
850, do you agree with us that Tetris should be trouncing Resident Evil 2?
absolutely. I hate to say it, but having played both, this is not even a contest. Probably Tetris was one of the first games I played as a kid. Yeah, this is not even a contest.
No, it is literally a contest. That's what we're doing.
No, I think, and the voting agrees, 86% for Tetris, 14% for Resident Evil. This was a blowout from the start. I'm sorry, Resident Evil, but you've been eaten by zombies. All right, our final matchup of this week has internal Nintendo war. This is a civil war in Nintendo land. We've got number 2 seed Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, representing, might I add, the entire Legend of Zelda franchise, because there were votes originally for every single installment of Legend of Zelda. I'm not even kidding. Even Spirit Tracks got a vote.
But we should mention that this is specifically the 3DS version, played on original 3DS, not an XL with the 3D turned all the way up.
Yeah, you got to handicap it a little bit. Against number 15 seed, just squeaked in, Mario Kart.
What version, though, Jeff?
Also representing all of Mario Kart. Because really,
so Mario Kart won.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the number one was Mario Kart 64. I think that got the most votes of all the Mario Kart games. But again, it was like all the Mario Karts got some votes. So I just put Mario Kart in there, probably foolishly. But
rigged. Rigged.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. What do you guys think? You think Mario Kart should beat Zelda, Christian?
No, I don't. But Mario Kart Advanced on the Game Boy Advanced is the best version of Mario Kart, and it's amazing.
Yeah, Zelda, I mean, Christian's correct, as usual. I would say, Mario Kart is a lot of fun, but it's not the game that any Legend of Zelda, much less Ocarina of Time, is.
Yeah, we're kind of ending on an easy one, it seems. But let's go to the audience and see what they think as well. 412, what do you think? Is there any chance in the world that Mario Kart could upend a Zelda or this particular Zelda?
No, not really. No. I mean, if it was a straight like Mario Kart 64 to Ocarina of Time, it'd be closer, I think, than looking at the series as a whole, at least for me. But especially the way you kind of position the series as a whole, it's got to be Zelda all the way.
All right. Do you think there are any other things you want to take issue with what we've decided so far? We have Mario 64 beating Dark Souls. We have BioShock beating Halo. We have Fallout beating Doom. We have Red Dead Redemption beating Persona 4. Shadow of the Colossus upsetting Call of Duty, Half-Life 2 beating Metal Gear Solid, Tetris upsetting Resident Evil 2, and Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time moving on past Mario Kart. Any qualms in that list?
And I'll throw out a quick argument for Halo versus BioShock again, because kind of like what Phil was saying, how, you know, if you played PC games, Halo wasn't doing anything new to you. I'd kind of say the same thing in some ways about BioShock, about a lot of other shooters as well, because, you know, everyone talks about its story, and really I think its story kind of came down to a really great plot twist, but really the story was kind of more about context in the world, which we'd seen Half-Life do, and audio logs, which I still think is kind of lazy. It kind of bothered me that they kept doing that in Infinite as well. But, you know, Halo, like you guys kind of talked about, with the combination of the first time a first-person shooter really worked well on a console, the vehicles, the kind of sandbox open nature of combat, I feel like it was doing more revolutionary things than BioShock ultimately did. Not to say BioShock's bad. I mean, they're both great games, but that's kind of where I sit on it.
Yeah. Interesting points. That seems to be the matchup that is most in question, and it makes sense. I mean, these are an 8 seed versus a 9 seed. You know, these were close votes originally as well. We'll take one more call and see what 720. You got an opinion on the decisions we've made today? Did I unmute you? No, I did not. Oops. Hello, 720. What's up? What do you think about these picks that we made?
So I gotta agree with the last caller too about Halo over BioShock. I think one thing too that no one's really touched on is the AI in that game was amazing when it came out. You know, enemies would actually flank you and get behind you, and you'd have to actually, you know, try and thin herds out with grenades and stuff like that. And I think that really propelled it. Yeah, the story was all right, but it still, you know, made sense within the context of the world. And I had a blast with it Christmas morning. I remember beating it in one sitting.
Yeah, that's one of the only games that I have played on every difficulty level. You know, I played it through on standard by myself, then I played it through on heroic cooperatively, and then my buddy and I that beat it on heroic cooperatively said, "Let's try it on legendary. I think we can do it." And that was truly one of the most entertaining experiences of my life, was sitting next to somebody in the same room playing through Halo on legendary difficulty and finishing that game. That was an exceptional experience. So I don't know, man. People are making good arguments. What do you guys think?
I think that years from now, people will still talk about Halo, and I don't think necessarily that will be true for BioShock. I'm talking years and years, like in 20 years. This is because I think Halo will still be regarded as the next big step in the console first-person shooter, and maybe this is wishful thinking on my part, but I think storytelling in games will have progressed, that games like BioShock and, you know, a game that I always hold up, The Last of Us, will almost be mentioned as like, oh yeah, and here's where the story started getting good. But I hope that stories continue to get even better, that we almost forget about those games because of where the genre goes. But for this vote right now in 2014, I still would put my vote for BioShock.
Well, you bring up Last of Us, and it will be on the docket next week. So be sure to tune in to DLC next week when we take the Spicer half of the initial bracket and discuss those 8 matchups. In 2 weeks, we will be back discussing the Elite 8, the Sweet 16. And we've got, for at least from this side of the bracket, we're going to have Super Mario 64 versus BioShock. We're going to have Fallout 3 versus Red Dead Redemption. We're going to have Shadow of the Colossus versus Half-Life 2. And we're going to have Tetris versus Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. Oh my gosh, those are some intense matchups. This is going to be fun. So that wraps up our March Madness for this week. Remember, you can vote for your favorites. We're going to put the voting up for next week even earlier. So keep track of jeffcanada.com with 2 N's and 1 T to find out when the voting goes up for that. You'll be able to vote all week long for next week's matchups. All right. So it's looking at my watch, I noticed that it's tabletop time. Tabletop time? Phil, are you a board gamer?
Not too much. I've been getting more into it recently. I've been discovering, actually playing stuff like playing Hearthstone has pushed me into discovering card games, which has pushed me into discovering board games. So I've been more interested in it as a thing, but I haven't really got into it yet.
I love that. I love that Hearthstone is becoming a gateway drug to the tabletop. I think that's really cool. I wanted to mention a board game that I played recently, played it at OrcCon that I mentioned a while back. And it's a very different kind of game from the games that I have been talking about on this show in recent weeks, in that it really isn't about who wins. There is a win mechanic to this game, but it's more about creating a story and living that story and having the fun, unpredictable things that happen. And that game is called Tales of the Arabian Nights. This is a game that came out several years ago. It's not particularly new, but it's pretty wild. It's basically Choose Your Own Adventure, the board game. And it's set in, as the title suggests, the Arabian Nights, the sort of Aladdin and Scheherazade and all these characters. And you select one of those characters and you move your character around the board and you're attempting to complete quests. And you can complete quests in a variety of ways. But what happens when you move onto a new space is that you have an encounter. So you draw a card and find out what kind of encounter that is. And that encounter invariably leads you to this giant book that comes with the game. It's a big sort of spiral bound journal that has hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of paragraphs of text written. And depending on what kind of encounter you get, you read one of those hundreds of paragraphs and it describes the encounter. And then you have a series of options, and there's dozens and dozens of options that you have about how to react to this encounter. And depending on what you select, it then leads you to another paragraph in the book, a wildly different place, just like you would in a choose your own adventure book. So you find out what your decision led to in that encounter and how you what you get out of it. Sometimes you get good things. You can get cards that give you treasure or give you new abilities. You can get skills, and the skills are all over the place, from like good looks and charm to you know, being able to use swords better or whatever it is. There's a whole bunch of different skills. I mean, sneaking and disguise and acting and all kinds of crazy stuff that allow you to do certain things in these encounters better. So as you encounter new things, as you get these new skills, as good things happen, as bad things happen, sometimes you get shuffled off to an island, or you go to jail, or you get wounded, or you become crippled, or you all kinds of different things can happen to your character. And you're attempting to get these quests and score points to complete the game. But at a certain point, you realize it doesn't really matter about the points, because you have no real idea as to whether something is going to be successful or not. It's just about experiencing this story and making decisions. It's a really wild, fun, interesting, different kind of game. It's very expensive because there's a lot to it. I can't imagine the level of complexity that went into writing each of these scenarios and the variations that happen in the hundreds and hundreds of paragraphs of text. But it's really an interesting thing, and I would recommend it to people. Especially, it's a great game for people that aren't into the competitiveness of a lot of board games. They just want to have a fun experience and sit around a table and get into fun conversations and have an adventure. This is that game. It's Tales of the Arabian Nights, and I had a blast playing it and have played it several times now. And I would recommend it. It's not going to scratch the same itch as a lot of games, but that could be a good thing. So,
I think that you sold it well, but like, I started to glaze over at the lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of text to read.
You're not reading all of it at any given time. The whole point is that there's so much there that you're only reading a very small fraction of it. So very few games are even
the same.
Yeah,
right.
That you're not even ever doing anything remotely the same. So it's
so you're not the
so
type
much
of
there.
Gamer that like just sits down and reads it all, like spoils it.
No, I'm not. You know me, Christian. I'm not that guy. I don't watch trailers for movies because I'm worried about that stuff.
What did you think of the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer?
I did watch it. I have to admit, I did watch it. I couldn't not. I'm excited about it. Hey, Phil, is there anything else you want to talk about in this episode? Any other video game stuff? Or
no, I'm. To be honest, I've just got this copy of Dark Souls 2 here staring at me and really wants me to keep playing it.
Tease, you massive tease. Mm-hmm. All right, well, that'll do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks to everybody who called in. Thank you, Phil, for being with us. Tell the people where they can... Absolutely. Tell the people where they can see your stuff.
Sure. I'm over on Twitter, twitter.com/pkoller. That's PKOLLAR. And of course, I am the deputy reviews editor at polygon.com. So you can see all of my reviews, including my review for Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2, which is up now. My review for The Walking Dead Season 2, Episode 2 should be up tomorrow. And my review for Dark Souls 2, all these twos, should be up next week.
Awesome. Christian, what about you this week? What's going on?
Oh, I don't know. I just got back in town. March 11th is What's New at Nerdist. I guess that's next Tuesday. And March 13th is Improv or Stand-Up at UCBLA. And it's Improv by Belmonte, which is one of their newer Herald teams, and Stand-Up from Rory Scovel and Kyle Kinane, two good friends and hilarious people. and something I don't think I've ever mentioned on this show. If you like people that you probably know from video game podcasts talking not about video games at all, Stuart Nock, who you might know as Wombat, and I do a show, a podcast called Uninformed Opinions. And it's 30 minutes, and we just talk about a random topic for 30 minutes. Last week's was Harold Ramis because it was so hard to ignore, but we've also talked about ice cream. And they're really stupid, and maybe check it out.
Awesome. It is a really fun show. I've been on it, and I listen to it. It's a good time. I will say that I haven't been in Palm Springs all this week doing shows, doing the 39 Steps. We opened the show there on last Friday and already got really great reviews and awesome audiences. So if you find yourself anywhere near the Palm Springs area, come check it out. People are really loving the show. I'm super proud of it. It's really funny and fun. And there's only 7 performances left. And then I can come back and get back into playing video games for real. I'm really excited to check out the new 2.0 Diablo patch and get back into that game, among other things. So you can also submit your votes for next week's March Madness at jeffcanada.com. You can find out all about 39 Steps there as well. That's with 2 N's, 1 T. Follow me on Twitter at jeffcanada, 2 N's, 1 T. And on Twitter this week, Hannibalo said that DLC stands for Donuts Leave Crumbs, which is very true. I don't know how it pertains to our show, but it's very, very true, unless you eat the donut very fast. All right, guys, that does it for this week. Remember, you can rate us on iTunes. Tell your friends about the show. Every Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific time, we record live. Hope to see you next week. And until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.